Committee will come to order. Good morning. Welcome to the meeting of the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee for January 28, 2010. We do have a quorum. First item is approval of the agenda. Are there any changes anyone wishes to make to the agenda that was previously distributed? If not, I'll ask unanimous consent that the agenda be accepted as presented. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. We also have the minutes of the December 17th meeting, which also have been previously approved. Are there any comments or questions about the minutes of the prior meeting? Ms. Hewlett moves approval, and Mr. Giancola seconds. Questions on the motion to accept the minutes as presented. No further discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Minutes are accepted. And that brings us to our regular schedule. We're going to begin with a safety report, which takes on particular significance this week. Mr. Cato?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Before Mr. Caborn begins his report, I again want to express my deep condolences to the families, friends, and co-workers of Jeff Gerard and also Sung Oh. I did speak to their families and express the condolences of this agency of their tragic loss early Tuesday morning while carrying out their jobs on the rail line. I have offered whatever support I can give or the agency can provide to the families, that I will be in touch with them again today after the board meeting to discuss and to ensure that we are supporting them in every means possible. Mr. Taborn will talk into more details of the accident and what is the status of the National Transportation Board investigation. And so I would like to turn it over to Chief Taborn for that discussion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cato. Mr. Chairman, other members of the committee, today I would like to take the opportunity to update you all on the status of various NTSB investigations, as well as FTA and the Tri-State Oversight Committee's audit of the WMATA. In reference to the June 22nd Metro Rail crash, the lead investigator for the National Transportation Safety Board, Ed Dobrinsky, the investigation is ongoing. We've been made aware that public hearing is slated for February 23rd and 24th of this year at 0900 hours. In regards to the West Falls Church train crash that took place on November 29th, that investigation as well is ongoing, and the lead investigator is Mr. Steve Kleiss. With regard to the most recent accident at Rockville and the unfortunate deaths of Mr. Gerard and Mr. O, the NTSB is currently on site here. The lead investigator, as well as in that particular case, is Mr. Steve Kleiss. They are continuing to collect information and look at evidence and interview potential witnesses and employees that were involved in that. In regard to the FTA audits, the one that we're going to talk about briefly this morning is in regards to the roadway worker protection study, and that audit was submitted to the WMATA based on the December 31st activity. What we have provided to the Tri-State Oversight Committee is answers to and corrective actions that will address the 18 findings that were documented in that particular report. We've had the collaborations on the corrective actions with external sources during the right-of-way safety workshop that took place January the 11th and 13th, as well as internal members of WMATA's departments doing prior and following the workshop. Next slide. In 2009, one of the items TOC focused on was reviewing Special Order 0706. Which addresses rules protecting moving crews and individuals working along the metro right-of-way. On December 3rd and December 10th, while accompanying track walkers and supervisors, TOC members observed violations to the implementation of this special order. on December 10th, a top member and the track crew being observed was nearly struck by a revenue train operating at full speed, which was in total violation of Special Order 0706. NTOC produced a report that was dated December 31st, and in this report, they indicated 18 findings of inadequacies and concerns between WMATA rules compliance. The State Department investigated the near miss. Rail Transportation provided track work schedules daily to train operators. And these are some of the immediate actions that we took. TSSM debriefed track workers on the incident and right-of-way rules. Radio communications continues between rail operations control and train operators. And rail transportation leadership is encouraging all right-of-way workers to radio in for additional protection if they deem fit. New permanent orders have been drafted to address specific top findings and will be submitted to TOC. I might add that this report, along with the corrective actions, were submitted to the members of the board yesterday afternoon, as well as to the other members of this group that participated in this effort. We conducted, under the leadership of General Manager Cato, a right-of-way safety workshop during the week of January 11th through the 13th. And this was attended by safety and track experts from the Bay Area Rapid Transit District, MTA New York City Transit, the MTA Maryland, SEPTA, FTA, the Tri-State Oversight Committee, and ATU Local 689, as well as numerous WMATA departments revealed. And what was revealed were key themes for WMATA moving forward. WMATA's approach to developing a formal and standalone road worker protection program will address the majority of the 18 findings that were contained in that report regarding Special Order 0706 and will include the following considerations. Rules and procedures. It will address training and certification, supervision and control, tools, systems, and technology. And what we are tasked with doing is creating a new right-of-way clearance and safety rules sections in the Metro Rail Safety Rule Book, which will address conduct a wayside survey to identify all hot spots for the right-of-way workers, and this is throughout the entire system. We will develop a guide to govern access to these hot spots, perform an analysis to determine top operating speeds around right-of-way crews, evaluate the installation of maximum authorized speed signs at key locations to reduce train speeds around blind curves and other locations. We will be reviewing existing rules for flaggers, lookouts, and escorts, develop procedures to ensure quality job safety briefings for work crews, determine the need for rules regarding work protection in poor weather conditions and high noise decibel locations, enhance the quality of communications between track workers and the Rail Operations Control Center, review the frequency and type of Rail Operations Control Center announcements of right-of-way workers' locations, review and update horn sounding rules. In the training and certification, we will develop and roll out training for the new right-of-way protection program, develop a uniform agency-wide initial right-of-way safety course that includes tunnel walks and exposes WMATA employees and all other participants to all types of track environments and hazards. We will develop a uniform agency-wide training program for lookouts, escorts, and flaggers, require refresher training of the initial right-of-way course every 2 years, and in all training programs, emphasize personal situational awareness and risk management techniques. We will develop opportunities to strengthen employee risk management skills and partnership with the Local 689 to bring track workers, train operators, and controllers together in social settings to discuss right-of-way hazards. With regard to supervision and controls, the support supervisors in discussing rules and emphasizing key safety practices with employees will identify rules of the day, test employee knowledge of right-of-way worker protection program rules and procedures, observe employee compliance with right-of-way worker protection rules and procedures, conduct field audits regarding employee compliance and right-of-way worker protection programs rules and procedures, and compile monthly reports and develop action plans to address findings and concerns. With regards to tools, systems, and technology, we want to review current proposals to indicate the presence of workers in specific locations by looking at blue lights, flags, whistle boards. We want to review the use of lights carried by right-of-way workers to alert train operators, and any proposed system or technology that will be tested extensively before being integrated into the new right-of-way worker protection program. At the current time, all two systems and technologies being considered are secondary protections only, and current rules are still required and enforced. The new right-of-way clearance and safety rules section of the Metro Safety Rule and Procedures Handbook will be available for review by April 30th, 2010 to the Tri-State Oversight Committee. The Tri-State Oversight Committee is invited to attend the standing weekly coordination meetings to develop the right-of-way work protection program, and a schedule is forthcoming. WMATA will finalize rollout training on rules compliance based on the top review and approval of the new Metro Rail safety rule book and procedures. We've had conversations with the leadership of the Tri-State Oversight Committee. Initially, they are very pleased with what we submitted to them. They will, however, give us a final approval on that document and the way forward to address those corrective actions. But identifying the corrective actions is just one part of the puzzle. We have to complete and comply with those things that we stated that we were going to do in an effort to continuously make this system, the employees as well as the passengers who ride our system, as safe as possible. With regard to the next audit, which we received just 2 days ago, and that was an FTA audit of the Tri-State Oversight Committee with a special emphasis on the relationship of WMATA that was prompted by Senator McCluskey, we have been afforded the opportunity to comment on those drafts, on that draft report, with the understanding that we have to submit corrections to the Tri-State Oversight Committee by February 2nd, and then we will be in receipt of the final document, which will again, in all probability, identify recommendations and additional corrective actions proposals. And that is the report on the status of the NTSB investigation and the current the status of the audit findings from the FTA.
All right, let me understand. The recent tragedy is now under investigation by NTSB.
Yes, sir.
And I expect that's going to limit what we can ask or what you can answer.
Yes, sir. We can address anything before the accident.
Before turning it to my colleagues, let me also ask, we've seen the letter that sent over your signature to the Tri-State Oversight Committee, and it outlines the responses and the measures you're going to take to deal with the issues that they had identified.
Right.
Do they give some kind of further reaction to this? What's the nature of the interaction subsequently where they will give you feedback as to, you know, whether this is sufficient, whether your, you know, your proposal.
Well,
sir,
the
as it happened.
Preliminary report was favorable in the sense that it specifically addressed all of the findings that they had indicated, and it afforded them the opportunity and the identification of what particular person was responsible for the closing out of those corrective actions, something that in the past had not been quite clear. And so we provided that, and again, it included participation from a variety of different sources, the union, FTA, and they were initially quite satisfied with that response, but with the understanding that we had to deliver what we stated that we were going to deliver.
Some of these items have clear dates identified, like February 15th, 2010, or already implemented. Some of the items, it's not as clear to me when they would be, but I assume all of them are to take place sometime in the next several months.
Yes, sir. In the corrective actions, they should each identified finding and corresponding corrective action should have a due date on the attachment.
Okay, I may be missing it then. The items to begin with 10, I wasn't seeing a date on that. Or they all refer to that April 30th date? Is it that last date? Item 10, 11, 12, 13, all the way
yes,
down.
Sir. October 2nd and April 30th.
Okay. All right, well, I would suggest that we may want to plan on having another review and perhaps invite the Tri-State Oversight Committee leadership to come back to us, perhaps at some point in the spring when many of these actions are scheduled to have been completed, but within the next few months in any case. so that we can get their perspective on how we're doing on this. With that, I'll turn to my colleagues for questions or comments. I'd like to go first. Nobody has a question? Very well. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Our next item. Oh, you have a further report?
Yes, I can continue on if you want.
Yeah, go right.
What we're going to talk about today will be reviewing three items for the committee. An overview of the general manager's action plan to address safety issues and specific steps to win back the confidence of our riders and employees. A review of DuPont's contract and how they're assisting Metro in implementing safety culture and our safety initiatives and indicators for the month of this calendar year. Back on December 17th, under the leadership of General Manager Cato, he had issued a statement, and it stated that we will do everything we can to protect our riders, to restore their confidence in mass transit, and to prevent all barriers, including resources, from impeding our efforts to run the safest system possible. If people don't feel safe, we don't have riders. It's noteworthy to state that back in 2006, we had, at that particular time, over 240 corrective actions that were a part of the FTA triennial audits, the NTSB investigations, APTA peer review studies. And during that period of time, since the arrival of Mr. Cato, we have closed over 181 plus corrective actions. So we are working diligently to address those concerns. And the focus that came about during this December time frame brought all of Metro leadership together with the sole purpose of addressing all of the corrective actions, making sure that we identified a plan moving forward, and we've been working diligently to move forward this process. Mr. Cato appointed me as the acting chief safety officer in the latter part of November, and as soon as we get a chief safety officer in from the announcements, then he or she will continue moving forward and getting those things done that we need to do. The tri-state oversight, the FTA, WMATA itself, we're all concerned and dedicated to making sure that this system is as safe as possible. So participation of the outside peer review participants, they too have had problems at their respective transit properties. And throughout the transit industry, we all work in a comprehensive, collaborative fashion to make sure that safety is number one with all of us. So we are moving toward that direction. So with respect to our goal, as you can see here, will take an unprecedented level of teamwork and cooperation from employees, unions, external sources, and all levels of management. It stresses that every employee is accountable. Although not a new concept, it is one that has not always been clearly communicated. Next slide. I'll touch on some of the safety actions taken to date. Hiring. Enhanced background checks on potential employees, as well as moving towards a routine and standardized review of licenses of current employees. With regard to training, we've partnered with outside training facilities and agencies and currently are working with the Transit Safety Institute as well as the National Transit Institute to bring additional safety training to our employees. Later on this afternoon, we'll be meeting with the Federal Transit Administration, who's indicated a desire to assist in providing technical assistance to address many of the safety-related concerns that we have. With regards to procedures, the Metro Rail Safety Rules and Procedure is currently 85% complete. We're working on a Metro Bus Rule Revision, which is underway, and the Authority's System Safety Program Plan is being revised and will be forwarded to the Tri-State Oversight Committee for approval. The General Manager has met with the frontline management to reinforce duties and responsibilities, as well as heard their requests for additional assistance necessary to develop a different safety culture. With regard to the Safety Action Plan overview, ongoing activities, several of the ongoing activities are continuing working diligently to close all corrective actions. Currently, there are 63 corrective actions that are open. These do not include the most recent 18 findings with the responding corrective actions. They do not include any of the NTSB investigations, which we will receive some corrective actions with regard to that. We want to strengthen our safety committees at all levels, from frontline safety committees to executive safety committees, to quickly communicate and resolve safety-related issues. We have reached out to the Transit Safety Institute, as indicated earlier, and the National Transit Institute to help in providing additional training resources to our employees. And some of the next steps include always pursuing safety and security funding for safety-related repairs and preparing rapid procurement for these items when they're identified. We encourage and will continue to work at all levels to secure stronger safety oversight for not all rail, but all public transportation. Next slide. Now we'd briefly like to review DuPont's Sustainable Solutions, previously DuPont's Safety Resources Contract. This is a five-year contract to assist Metro in reducing our workers' compensation and third-party claims and improving safety processes. As listed here, DuPont Sustainable Solution was contracted to implement a safety management approach, reduce workers' compensation claims and third-party incidents, and thereby costs. The contract is a gain-sharing program that pays DSS quarterly based on cost savings from claims aborted. The fee methodology in general is based on claim and incident rate improvements with an established percentage of Metro saving paid to DSS. Currently, Metro has paid DSS $6 million through the life of the contract. Each quarter, claims are reviewed by Metro and DSS personnel, and a number of aborted or prevented claims are determined and used in the calculation to determine payment. I have with me now Ann Murtha, who, if we have additional questions, is the project manager for that particular initiative. But DuPont methodology, the approach is to attract the base of unsafe acts and conditions as well as a thorough investigation of all incidents. The approach was one of assessment, which was completed in the fall of 2007, and enhancements through process design and implementation. And looking at fiscal year 2009, there's a 26% reduction in bus incidents, 54% reduction in rail incidents, and 15% reduction in workers' compensation claims when compared to the 2007 baseline. The DSS payment through September 2009, again, is $6 million, and is estimated Metro aborted $19 million in claims with a net avoidance of $13 million to date. The estimated avoidance is based on average claim cost and aborted claims. Additionally, they have assisted Metro in establishing business process improvements that will impact safety results, such as the requirement that all performance plans for salaried employees have safety goals, standardized process and incident investigations, process improvements and training, assisted in the design of a centralized computer-based incident system that Metro is rolling out in this quarter. Additionally, Metro has implemented these programs, a pilot program that is showing great promise, focuses on high-risk employees who are interviewed and assessed to identify potential risks that can be alleviated through various means and prevent injuries. No one in the pilot group has sustained a subsequent injury. Establish a hierarchical framework of standing safety committees to identify and prioritize and resolve issues. A return to duty program is decreasing the number of days injured employees are out of work. That's been a 30% reduction. Safety conversations, rates are steadily increasing. These are conversations between supervisors and employees in an effort to also raise the safety awareness of our employees and to instill a safety conscience. And again, we talked about the safety initiatives that we participated in the safety workshop with the participants, so I don't think there's any need to go through that again. With regard to Metro bus safety initiatives, efforts continue to install cameras on the entire fleet, which will be of great benefit to both us from a security as well as the safety standpoint. The goal is to have the entire fleet equipped by the end of calendar year. As of December, roughly 80% of the operational with many that are not required being replaced under the new installation program.
Chief, question.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Chief, I was very enthusiastic when the general manager at the early part of his tenure talked about bringing DuPont in the idea of affecting the safety culture of the organization. Something that we all thought was needed, and I was very excited about it. I know that DuPont has been hired in places like Chicago, the CTA, and other trade and profit sets, and actually bringing them on board to do something similar. And I was looking at the performance trying to reconcile both the numbers, the amount of money they receive based upon performance, and the deaths and accidents that we've had within our agency. It's hard for me to kind of connect one to the other. In particular when, and I understand that you're going through a number of re-examination of our rules and our policies, and you're looking at even technology that could help our employees protect themselves. But I'm concerned as to what kind of impact are we having on the culture, and what is DuPont doing? Because some of these accidents are employees not protecting each other. Some of them are employees not following the rules that are already there. And, you know, my concern is if, and that's part of the culture, and if the company that we hired to impact the culture and those things are still going on, what is it that they're doing?
Well, I can comment, sir, on some of the observations that were made with the Tri-State Oversight and their audit. And the one thing that they did find was as they interviewed different portions of the agency, they did find that the DuPont, in regards to establishing accident investigations or creating a local safety committee or sort of implementing safety conversations that would create the tone of all safety activities, all work activities that would be led by safety conversations and talking about how we all could be safe. It also addresses risk avoidance. So from that standpoint and my limited knowledge with regard to that, I can only report back what was contained in the observations of the talk. I can call upon Ann Murther if she wants to come up and speak more about the formula and how we identify the benefits.
Good morning. DuPont is really here as our consultant to help us fix our management processes. We own what they have asked us to do, what they encourage us to put into place as far as accountability and safety management. Okay, but it is our processes that we want to take ownership of. As far as the methodology that the Chief Hayborn talked about earlier, by reducing risk impacts, looking at everything through safety committees, through observations, through the interaction with employees, the goal is to reduce risk. The more you reduce risk, the less chance of having incidents. But we do not have them involved in actual methods or telling us how to supervise our own employees. They simply give us the support we need to do better processes on the safety reinforcement.
Sure. You want to bond the voting just in terms of the chairman?
Yeah. Sure.
The biggest impact they've had, as the chief has discussed, and that came out of the talk review, is the establishment of safety committees and huge reductions in workers' compensation. You're correct in your observation. In some cases, they have made major inroads in reducing work-related injuries. But still, as you mentioned, we have had people who have not followed the safety rules and processes in place that have resulted in the recommendations from the TOC and the FDA, as well as some of the major accidents that we have had. Their role, they have intensified that. They've had impact based upon every analysis we can look at, but when it came to the major events, that did not occur. For some reason, that has not gotten through, and that's why we're continuously following up and changing the procedures and reviewing them and having training and retraining of our employees.
The safety committees, I know some from my experience that they've often been labor management safety committees. Has that been part of the WMATA culture, or is this something new that we're doing as a result of the DuPont recommendations?
Well, right now, there were a local safety committee that met with management, but what we're proposing now is the standing executive committee that includes ELT officials, representatives from the union, the Tri-State Oversight Committee, and then we can provide presentations to the board. So anything at that level, that nothing is missed, anything that's brought to our attention, whether that be from TALK, whether that be from FTA, whether that be from the local union, that is of great importance that we don't hesitate in bringing that to the attention of the board and acting upon it. And so that's the new process going forward.
Yes, it appears from the analysis that the safety committee concept has taken on new life in the last 2 to 3 years. Ramada's always had safety committees, but them being very, the activity of those committees and how often they met was very low, and that's been a major change. Obviously, we have not been as successful as we want, and having that, those committees have impact throughout the agency on every type of event. We've been successful when DuPont has been in major categories, but we can't say they were successful in all categories, or we, which is our responsibility. And employees following every route, so we don't have the events that we've had in the past 5 months.
Let me ask one final question. We also talked about in our safety plan technology, and you know, one of the things that you know I'm concerned about, you know, we're looking at our capital and capital expenditures and the kind of things that we need to do to deal with safety as well. And there's even some language within the new federal dollars that talked about those investments going into safety. Have we looked at any devices that could be used to alert that we have employees on our tracks that disengages, for instance, a vehicle with an employee on the track? Do we have anything that we've looked at that anyone else may have security use, and not just in transit but in railroads? That, and I know railroad safety is a kind of a ongoing problem in the industry, but have we looked at anything like that that we may want to? Because sometimes, you know, I'm getting concerned that we have to put something in place because even when you have the rules, sometimes people are on following the rules, and you know at the bottom line, then there may be something that has to even protect the people from themselves. Are we looking at something like that?
Absolutely. As we discussed at the last meeting, you know, we were looking at devices that mount on the rail car, devices that mount on employees, devices that mount in the infrastructure as well. Also, part of our communication whenever we had the other authorities that came on board, like New York and BART and such, was also to discuss where they're at and their respective level of what technologies actually work, you know, who they're talking with and who they're working with. So there is a lot of communication going back and forth, trying to figure out what is exactly, you know, the best system or the best protocol or the best procedure. One thing that is very apparent between all the transit authorities is that everybody has some differences in the way that they approach their safety. So that's why this meeting was very important for us to kind of get what we viewed as a very good market share of the industry leaders out there on what they're doing and how they're approaching things.
And there's also a look at the military GPS as a possible solution that we can provide that GPS tracking to identify people that are on our right of way. So that communication can be shared with the operations controller.
All right, Ms. Sledgins and then Mr. McKay.
Because I think both are important, but the cultural aspect goes to
the ability for everyone within the organization to recognize a risk to self or the authority. And those often don't happen only when there is an injury or a claim, but that you violated the rules. And the rules, no matter how small, and my experience with this is that it's the small things you do that build up to more tragedy. And how do we measure those to reflect that is an ongoing cultural change.
Again, the DuPont contract is a financial, a numbers-based contract. So we do not have any methodology written there to look at, you know, risks or complaints or observations or anything as far as result. It is simply based on the number of workers' comp claims and third-party claims that are generated.
To address the issue that you mentioned, that's what the chief has been discussing, that responsibility and that role rests with the management staff of the organization, and that's something that DuPont is going to fix. Is something we have to fix from the standpoint of our supervisors, managers, executives. We're frontline employees. That is a management issue of ensuring that we do have the proper equipment, safety procedures, and they are being followed. And they're in place, but the question is, are they being followed? How do we make sure that they are followed?
Well, I think that's paramount to getting to the root of it, because it's too late when an employee breaks a leg because something was left in the pathway or something, and you suddenly have a claim. But that consistently, who monitors what the safety measures are? And I think it's so important that we see those kinds of things, because we, the ones we don't want to see, are the ones that are the most egregious, and they bring the very harm that we are trying to avoid in our process. And I just think that it's important that's something that we demonstrate. I think when the DuPont contract was brought, it triggered the culture issue that I think all of us are familiar with that deal with. Dealt with any kind of safety in our organization. But the ultimate part of this measure is not avoidance of cost. It's avoidance of the inability for the system to function at the level of efficiency and safety. That's a cost factor, but all of those other things layer before. And I think it would be interesting to see some of that data, that's what's occurring with those safety committees, and how they monitor
themselves and the organization. And that's exactly how we're going to go about making sure that any identified hazards, any safety violations, any observations from quality assurance or the supervisors get put into a database that we all can see, both safety, both the supervisors, and we can look at the consistency of something happening to the relationship with training. And so if something continues to happen and it creates a problem, then it's quite evident that there may be some need to have some training or some special attention that supervisors or safety or anybody looking in from the outside can do an analysis and to address the problem before it happens. And so that's what we're working to do as well.
Appreciate the last question and the general manager's answer, because it's actually going at right what I was looking at. When you look at the goals, the very first sheet, I think we almost have to get over the DuPont contract. I think its value is obvious, but it's a prevention type of attitude, and that's very important for protecting our employees. But the reality on the ground is we've had some significant issues. Some significant accidents. I think the statistics speak for themselves and are good, but where my concern is on our goal, the very last item, which is holds each and every employee accountable for safety. I've heard a lot of elaboration here about all of the other issues on here, the day-to-day safety, the training, trying to instill culture, and I think all of those things are steps in the right direction, but what I'd like to hear is a little bit more elaboration of what it means to hold each and every employee accountable for safety, because we've had incidents out there, and I guess our riders are more interested in finding out what we're doing after those incidents to make sure they don't happen again. And part of that is what we're doing with employees who are involved in those situations, because this organization, like many, has some people who don't play by the rules. Most of them do. So what are we doing to deal with the issue of holding each and every employee accountable for safety? It's a key part of the goal. It's the last part, and it's the part, truthfully, we've spoken the least about this morning, and we've kind of dodged in different ways, but I will ask it directly. What are we doing to deal with that?
If I could speak on that, the chief and I have been working very, very closely, as y'all have seen, on a lot of initiatives, a lot of things that are taking place. With this recent incident, the chief and I, we discussed, and what I've done is I've, myself, at my level, I've personally involved myself in the review, investigation, and interviews. I'm approaching this in a manner which, at my role and capacity, I view that I am the individual that has to implement these changes to ensure that all employees are held accountable and are following the rules. Part of which is the only way that I know to get after it is to be in there directly. Some of the areas that I'm delegating to my staff, in other areas that are, you know, day-to-day functions. But the safety initiative on my part is to sit in here, look at this, and to come up with a strategic plan that not only the individuals at my level understand, but the frontline employees must understand that this is the way that we conduct our business. Safety is very important, but it also has to have a business plan behind it. And so that is my commitment at this stage, is my personal involvement at this level, going through this review, looking at things. For example, we'll talk about the Martin Luther King weekend. One of the things that I spent was 3 days up there just watching how our employees work, what people are doing, and how we're doing that. And it has to be a hands-on approach, and that has to filter down. I think prior to, you know, we delegate certain things to staff, but we've gotten to a point that it's utmost accountability now. And that's the only way that I think that we can address it.
This is a follow-up to that. That's good. It sounds preventative in nature. I guess my question is when we have accidents and we determine that there's a rule that's broken, a regulation that's not followed, something that's done that shouldn't be done, what happens then? What happens at that point?
If I may, I'd like to talk about some of that because of discussions and meetings I've had with the frontline management over the past few weeks. I want to go back even to lower levels and go back to the discussion of cell phones and texting and rule changes, that if an employee violates that employee is terminated. But that's the front line. Those are the employees. What about their supervisors and managers? And the accountability that they must have. And one of the policy changes that we have made, and we're still working just from a legal perspective, in my discussions with employees or supervisors, first, I talked about their responsibility, their role in safety, and then I talked about their accountability. And I announced to them that we're changing and will require to avoid modification of our employment procedures. All levels of superintendents and above, those responsible for employees in the field, will be at-will employees. And what I'm saying is, not just for incidents, but if we find that they have been safety violations that have not resulted in injury, and that employees have reported to them safety violations that they have not enacted, then we will replace them. Just like someone who doesn't use a cell phone, if a manager does not go out and review the safety procedures and follow up and ensure compliance, that is no different than an employee who uses a cell phone. That's a violation that will result in that person losing their job. Now, we don't want to fire people. We want them to do that. So as a result, they are now out getting safety communications in addition to what they have in the past, they must report to me every 2 weeks. All of the superintendents come in, and at random, I am selecting them to give me a 10-minute presentation on what have they done in the last 2 weeks, specifically what have they done. It is not an option for them. They were told that failure to do that will result in actions. It's my understanding that those meetings are happening. I will know next week when I have my first meeting with the superintendent the degree of that program. So it's going from the general manager down of accountability and responsibility. And this is not one, oh, isn't that bad, don't do it again, or this isn't one that's just in your performance review. A violation of failure to act is the same, in my judgment, as an employee who's texting while operating a vehicle.
Very good. Last comment. That's very good. Frankly, in this organization, we need 100% of people to follow the rules and regulations, and the employees of this organization need the confidence that the people working beside them are held to that standard, and if they're not, actions are being taken all the way up the food chain. That's a very good major change, and that's part of the cultural change here, but goes right at the last item, which is making sure that there's accountability for our employees and that they have the confidence when they're working at WMATA that their fellow employees are looking out for their safety, following the rules and regulations, and if they're not, then actions will be taken. So that is a major positive change. Thank you.
Mr. Benjamin to be followed by Mary.
Immediately after the accident, which occurred on Tuesday, I had a discussion with the general manager about what we are doing and how we're doing it and what it is that we can do, the changes. It's clear that what we have done and minor changes to what we have done and the process that we've gone through doesn't seem to be working and that we need a lot of help. Based on that discussion, we've reached out to the U.S. Department of Transportation. And we said, we need help. You've got some really top experts, people who can look at our safety system, people who can look at our safety culture, and tell us from top to bottom, do we need to do this differently? And if so, how do we need to do it differently? And then help us implement it, not just come, do a committee review, send a report to the board and to the staff and walk away, but actually help us make it happen. The U.S. Department of Transportation has swung into action very, very quickly. They put together a group that involves, that includes Peter Apple. Mr. Apple is the administrator of the Research and Innovative Technology Administration. Randy Babbitt is the administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Peggy Gillian, she's the Associate Administrator for Safety, Aviation Safety, and Peter Rogoff, who's the Administrator of the Federal Transit Administration. That's a very high-level group of people who will be looking at who they can identify and what groups they can identify that can be of assistance to us in reviewing what we're doing and in moving forward in a new and different way. We have also reached out to the American Public Transportation Association with the same comment. They are looking at and are supplying us with names of people who can join whatever group we put together to assist us. And we reached out to the AFL-CIO to make sure that the union employees who are critical to this process are also included and have people who understand their part of this activity who will be part of trying to solve our problem. I think the time has come for us to do this differently. The general manager and I agreed on that, and USDOT has been incredibly helpful. AFL-CIO has been incredibly helpful. APTA has been incredibly helpful. And hopefully we will be able to put in place a new and different way for us to look at the issues that we're facing and change our overall safety systems and culture.
Very important initiative, and certainly applaud you for taking the lead on this. I'm sorry, was Mary, you waiting?
I'll let him piggyback.
Oh, Mr. Lynn.
I applaud the action on the Mr. Fisherman. The only thing I will say in all the candor,
that's helpful, but that doesn't get down to the bottom line of this agency. There have been, the last two decades, there have been committees brought in from the Federal Transit Administration to make recommendations to WMATA about safety. There has been reshuffled of the safety office from directly reporting to the general manager to be down to the front line. There has been experts come in from the NTSB and written volumes and volumes of recommendations. There's been blue ribbon panels from AFTA that's come in and done safety reviews with recommendations. The bottom line gets down to within the organization, the day-to-day accountability that my colleague made reference to, holding people accountable for protecting each other and standing some standards for their fellow employees, citing employees when they violate the rules, even when the rule violation does not result in the accident, but it resulted in a violation of the rules, holding them to those standards within the organization. I think, you know, you hit it right on the head early on in the discussion that you have with the general manager. That's where it rests. The committees and the administrators and the experts will come and go, and it still gets down to what happens in this organization with the employees within it and holding them accountable. I think that nothing else is going to go beyond.
Yeah. Benjamin.
Mr. Layton, I agree with you completely. And basically, in the discussions that we had exactly the same set of statements that you made, which is we can't do what we've done in the past. We can't put together a committee that comes in, writes a report, goes away. We need people who will help us do the kinds of things you're talking about and make it a sustainable change in our system and in our culture. And you're absolutely right. Sooner or later, that means that all of the people who work here and the board all have to see that safety is the most important thing we do, and they're going to try to help us make that change.
Mary, you'll second Mr. Gray.
Yeah, thank you, and I apologize if you've already covered this. Help me to understand the estimated net cost avoidance. That's here. It says $13 million over 2.5 years of the contract. Is that a savings as a result in this part of the under the contract terms that we have with DuPont?
Yes, I'm going to ask Seth to go into the detail, but basically, we looked at the rate of injuries that we were having in the past. The rate of increase from a historical perspective, what their actions have done to reduce those numbers of claims. And we've had the actual drop in claims, and you assign a monetary number to those claims based upon an average, and that's where that number comes from. Again, I don't do it on the day-to-day basis.
But it has some inflationary factor built into it. This was the formula agreed upon in the contract, but our own actuarial forecasts are seeing the same, are seeing that reduction, which we will not realize for several years after the contract is still is terminated, but we'll still be seeing that reduction in actual costs.
Okay. Remind us in terms of what our annual exposure, average exposure has been for this cost. And the cost.
Not the pressure risk side, but it's about $17 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know it's a large number, and that's, you know, when since I've been on the board, I've been yelling and screaming about the high cost of workman's comp, and we need to find a way to address it, and then we went to the DuPont contract arrangement when you came on board. We appreciate that. And then it talks about a 15% reduction in workman's compensation claims, which is nice, but that's still not enough. But what was the total claims in fiscal 2009? Do you know what that was?
I want to ask someone to get that number. Okay.
And then with regards to, and I agree with my colleague who talked about the focus, holding each and every employee accountable for safety, and the response was that we're in the process of creating a business plan behind it. Can you elaborate a little bit on that in terms of what's the concept of the business plan? I think in my mind, I know what I'd like to see happen, but what are you offering or suggesting?
I think the chief can go more into the details of the Disney plan, but let me just put it down in plain English. What I have seen and what the reality is and what came up before. You can have all the safety rules, policies, and procedures, you can have thousands of them. But if people violate those and there's no consequences, then the message is they're really not important. And obviously, if we look at what's happened in the agency, and I'm not speaking all employees, obviously, but we have employees who are not following the procedures and there have not been consequences. We have employees who have communicated issues of safety to their supervisors, and in some cases, nothing has happened because that was not a priority and there has not been any major consequences. And the basic business plan is there are consequences. There are no exceptions if you have that role. And there are people reporting to you safety issues and you have not acted to fix those, then you, even though nothing has occurred, the business plan is that you will not be in that role anymore. And employees who violate our safety rules, we will take other actions. That's the basic plan. I mean, there's details on how you implement it, how you do the training, how we report it, how we computerize that, and who looks at it. But the basic change is, and I have to be honest, I do not believe that's been the culture of the agency. I have heard that from employees. I've heard that from the union, that people are injured and there's no consequences for failure of management to not just investigate that and not just say, well, that's just one time, but to truly implement changes.
Okay. Appreciate that, Mr. Cato. And, I'm sure this will, evolve, as it's evolving, it'll be further developed and enhanced in terms of, more positive structure to it. But in my mind, again, when and we had the public hearing last night and folks were, that came out, we're talking about offering ways and said we ought to look at other ways in our own budget and how we can trim more costs. I can't think of a better way to trim costs than to be a zero tolerance with workman's comp. I mean, if it was $17 million, now it's down to whatever. It's probably still at 10 or 12. That's way, way too high. Hopefully we can get it down to $5 million and eventually zero. And that's the savings, and we wouldn't be having the public hearings and talking about raising fares and potentially and so forth. The other side of the coin in terms of part of the business plan, and I know we do this in my business in the construction industry, is that it's nice to have a cost avoidance or savings, and that was part of the contract, which I agree with. An outside contract party, third party comes in, they do an analysis, they can identify savings, and then the savings is shared. But nothing in my mind, I believe, is shared with the employees, the workforce. And that is another element in the area that needs to be focused on in terms of rewarding people who are very committed to safety. And that in of itself will go an awful long ways to help, I think, minimize not only incidents and accidents, but to create a more positive safety atmosphere, environment throughout the whole system if folks are getting rewarded. I mean, people need to recognize that we're talking about dollars that could be in their paychecks, all the 10,000 employees in their paychecks. It's not there because it could be either direct costs, I mean, payment to them, or it can be fringe benefits. But it's not there because we're having to deal with this heavy burden of workman's comp claims. Now, zero tolerance is nice to say, let's shoot the target for that, but we know we're not going to ever get there. There's always going to be accidents. But hopefully accidents will not be lost time accidents and injuries. And that's where you recognize a tremendous amount of savings. But I think we ought to take a look at how we can share some of this savings with the employees as another part of the business plan model.
And I think that speaks to the enhanced partnership with the local union. They've been working with us side by side, and many of the issues that came to the forefront also includes their members, and many of their members have been injured, maybe as a result of another one of the members not doing what he or she is supposed to do. So they have a vested interest, and they've been working in a collaborative fashion, and the rewards as well as punishment
probably something that they would definitely welcome, because the result is that we all are safe and we all go home.
Thank you very much. I want to commend Mr. Benjamin for his initiative in putting this together, because I think it's important and it has great potential for us, and I'm pleased to see it. I would like to put before them, however, the need, and this needs to go to Congress as well, the need to remove the express prohibition on the Federal Transit Administration setting federal safety standards. You know, I mean, and we've said this over and over and over again. When we turn to crashworthiness on our rail cars, which I know we don't want to get into right now, you know, where were the standards? Well, who could set standards for such a thing? Only the Federal Transit Administration, and in their law today is a prohibition against them acting, and that prohibition didn't come from thin air. It came from the Congress of the United States. So while, you know, while we're thinking about all of this, let's get FTA into the safety business, not as a member of a task force, but as a regulator of transit safety. The second thing I just want to say is that this system opened on March 27, 1976. Our first employee fatality was on May 12, 1977, according to the records that I have. And since May 12, 1977, there have been, by my count, which cannot be taken as official, 16 employees who were fatalities in terms of rail and other accidents. Five of those have occurred since September. So in the 30-plus years that the system has been operating, something on the order of a third of the fatalities have occurred since September. That's not mentioning all the suicides that we've had, which is a different and but equally challenging situation. The fact of the matter is that we have a pattern relating to these employee fatalities. And the pattern is, you know, there's great concern, there's uproar, there is, as we have right now, investigation. And then we never seem to hear anything more. You know, and so I look at this official Metro document, and I see these employees listed. I see some of them even have pictures. But what I don't see is an analysis of what happened. You know, a candid analysis of what happened, so that we could have a better idea of just what is the problem that we should be addressing. And I would include in this not just the 16 or so fatalities, this is only five, the five that have occurred since September, included an employee of a contractor. So, you know, but an employee all the same. But I would include in this, Mr. Cato, major injuries. Major injuries. And because I don't want to go back into time too far, can't we do this over the period of, say, 2 years and get a real analysis of what happened? Because I have the impression, but I cannot document this, that a lot of this is due to distraction. It's not a situation where people are poorly trained to operate complicated equipment, or that the complicated equipment isn't functioning correctly. Is that people are doing things that put them in the way of harm, and then harm occurs. But I can't say that definitely, because I don't know it, and I certainly don't know it from reading this. So I would request through you, Mr. Zimmerman, that we get an analysis of fatalities and major injuries that have occurred in the past 2 years out there in litigation. I understand that. If there's legal dimensions to this, I understand that. If it is, as today, NTSB investigation, I understand it, but give us some sense in an unvarnished way of how these fatalities and major injuries occurred. And because I don't know about the rest of you, but I cannot say today that I know, even though I've been on this board, this is my 12th year, and I've had, I didn't count this part, but I've had, you know, 8 or 9 of these fatalities occur since I've been a board member. So I'd like to request that information.
You made it of me, but of course I can't deliver that. Mr. Cato, is that an analysis that you can provide?
Yes, that information exists.
Then I'll ask if it's the will of the committee that the request be
document, by the way, I've misspoken, is from Washington.
Again, if committee members concur, then we will request that be done and provided by staff.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Next is Mr. Jankola, and then Ms. Hudgens, and I think we need to move on to the next item.
Yeah, I'm not going to re-tally all the earlier discussions. I certainly would agree that the first-level supervisor is the very important cog in this wheel. But besides the safety committees, I would want to make a suggestion in this area. Besides the individual training, we really need to be doing, if we're not already doing it, crew training. You know, the individual crews. And sometimes crews work with other crews. So the interaction with different crews are very important. It's not just the individual or the supervisor, but how the team works, almost like a fire department team. So I think, please look at that. Second thing is we're already embarked on a major effort to do maintenance and construction and rehabs of our stations. A lot of work's done at night. And you know, I'm concerned, and maybe it needs to be looked at, that are we biting off too much and trying to get things done too quickly? So maybe we need to take some more time to do some of these projects. Maybe we're cutting it too thin. So take a look at that, because sometimes crews, in their natural tendency, want to get the job done quick, do rush, and they do try to make shortcuts. And that would be a concern of mine. And I'm sure you're probably already looking at that, but you know, and you probably build in a lot of conservative time in some of these projects and night work, but please look at that. And also, if we don't already light up our nighttime activities, you know, with adequate lighting, we should probably consider certainly adding illumination to the aspect of needs for a lot of our night work.
My comments, I say with caution, but I would hope that we would not rush to simply add on another study or another study group when I think we really know where we are. It's the question of can we do it? And I think that's the most important thing to me. And I'm going to use an anecdote as an example. And this is where I think culturally it is the issue. And we don't need FTA to tell us that that's the issue. I think there are organizations of our size that understand and operate under an extreme adherence to safety as the leading thing to do in the organization. And to me, it's how do you get the people to think it. I made a phone call because I saw a person coming along the side of the track. My bus was going on. And I immediately called them, and this is years ago, and I immediately called them to ask, what might be going on? It took a day and a half to figure out. And the final response was, oh, I think it was someone who forgot to put on their safety vest. Now, that's a violation of extreme safety and security. But it took too long to figure out, one, that it was, two, I don't know whatever happened. And I believe this is not about a study. This is about how you implement what you say you're doing. And it starts at the bottom and it's very bottom. It has to start at the bottom. It can't start at the bottom. You know, it's the little things that nick away cause big things to happen. And that has to be our has to be there, that is in the way to cause me to fall. Whoever gets comfortable with it can be there. It can be everywhere. I believe there's complexity to this. Definitely there's complexity to this. Does it require management? Definitely requires management. But everybody in this organization is in it together. And so those two employees that we lost last week, we have to say we all were not in it together for them, because somewhere along the way it etched away to the fact that that happened. We recognize we have accidents and we deal with it in many ways, but I think our focus needs to be on starting at the bottom and not at the top. I think it really is an important thing, but I'm not ready to embrace another study. I have to tell you. Because I can tell you, you can get a lot of folks around and say, well, let me tell you again what think we need to take up time and follow the commitment that we're going to have everyone focus on safety. And that is from the smallest to the largest kind of concern in our organization. So I raise my caution as we go back out to look at another group of folks to tell us what we really need to learn. I think we're doing it. I think we just have to be consistent and follow through on the accountability that we have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this is really in response to Ms. Hedges and Mr. Linton's comments in particular. I think everybody here has really good ideas as we grapple with these issues, but sometimes you have multiple choice questions and the answer is either A or B or C, and sometimes it's D, all of the above, and I think this is one of those all of the above situations where I think, as Mr. McKay clearly pointed out, I think we have to have the accountability. He wants to know if we need the frontline training and have to have the accountability, has to know that something happens, whether there is an injury, a resulting injury or fatality or not, just the mere violation. As Mr. Cato pointed out, we have to have that zero tolerance policy in effect, and everybody has to know it. We also have to have, I think we also have to have the committees. They're not just committees to pontificate, as I understand it. They're to make real recommendations and even give us names of any other thing that can help us here. And I think those things combined will help here. I think we're at a point in time where we have to use every available avenue to address, to wrap our hands around this problem and to fix it. And I think we're trying. I think, you know, the report that I heard today is good. I think that taking the steps are imperative. The two-week reporting, all of that is imperative right now. But I think all of the above, I think we have to handle this now. And I guess I want to go back to you, Chief, about the deadlines that you have in the reports. You had an April deadline and an October deadline. And I know we're not going to wait until the last minute and say, okay, here are everything's in place on April, whatever, April 29th, or anything
absolutely
like that.
As soon as we can complete deliverable and we can do it 30 days before that deadline,
yeah,
then we're going to work diligently to do that.
Some things will be easier to do,
absolutely,
to accomplish than others.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we want everything done as soon as possible. And I just think we have to look at every avenue available to us to try to get this, to wrap our hands around this problem, including the suggestions that you made.
All right, I think that's be the last word for today, although obviously we will be spending a considerable amount of time in this area. Thank you very much. In consideration of time, I'm going to suggest that we forego formal presentation of item B. The report, you know, has been distributed to us. There is a lot of good information in it. I appreciate some of the new presentation and statistics that reflect requests in previous meetings. If board members, if they haven't already done so, will want to take a look at that at their leisure. The most significant thing I note is that when you see the summary of crimes, what's notable to me is that over the five-year period, two categories account for pretty much all the rise, larceny and robbery. The other's fairly flat. Again, we'll have future opportunities to talk about this matter. Let's go quickly to item C and what's going to happen over Martin Luther King weekend. What did happen in Martin Luther King weekend by way of repairs. But I'd ask Mr. Kubitschek if we could have a very succinct.
I know you're anxious to move along, but
yes.
I did have a question on the police issues. And isn't that number B?
It is. All right. In that case, we will take number B. Can we forego the presentation?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Graham's question.
I am concerned about the police deployment. And I don't remember. I may have asked for this information. I may not have, but I'm glad to see it provided on the deployment issues. And this is a very important issue for people I represent in the District of Columbia. First, I just want to ask, can we have a geographic breakdown of all this?
Geographical breakdown based upon the districts. We have two districts that represent an impact system. Akinchik, Delinsky is coming up. District 1, it sort of splits the Metrorail system in half so that response time can be be lessened. But Jeff can tell you as to how many police officers we have in each respective district.
Well, I don't know if we have either of them time or anything. I'd like to see it in writing. I'd like to see where these officers are assigned, and both in terms of the geographic area, but also in terms of the specific areas. We've got a lot of issues, Mr. Chairman, just recently about problems within the station on the rail cars. It's been the state of issues related to this. Can I call you Jeff, please?
Please.
Jeff knows all about this. And I've got to go back to my constituencies and say, you know, how are we covering these trains? How are we covering the stations? What are we getting in the District of Columbia? Can we get that more specific information, please?
Understood. We have a organizational chart prepared for you. We'll provide that to you in the mail out, as well as the geographical breakdown as far as the number of officers dedicated to the District of Columbia, Commonwealth, Virginia, and State.
Thank you. And also, in specific, I want to know where these officers are to be present. And then revenue protection, this is my second and final question. Revenue protection, I see you're still committing, you're here to be committing 28 officers to revenue protection. I've heard from Mr. Cato on this on several occasions, saying that we were going to find other ways to utilize this very valuable resource.
We are, sir. We have an experimentation going on now that will increase uniform presence in the system and still afford the revenue collectors, those people who go out and take the monies out of the machine with the same level of protection. But we're not staying with them. Well,
I think
there are collection services, the word Brinks comes to mind, that seem to be able to function in the private sector. I mean, I think you should at least look at the possibility, because these are people who have the ability to arrest. You know, criminals, they're armed, they're trained to be police officers, and there may be other ways we can protect our very important revenue without having 28 officers doing it.
Well, we do use armored trucks from Brinks to deliver money to the bank, but we're talking about protecting the WMATA employees as they retrieve the money from the revenue of machines.
Mr. Chairman, we have had some discussions. I'd like to have those discussions in closed session. I don't want to publish exactly who's where at what time we're collecting the money and how many officers are there. I think where you're going, I agree. But I would like to have that briefing in the closed session.
That's fair enough. But the other information that Mr. Graham is requesting, I assume we can have.
We have it prepared, and we will send it to every board member.
We all look forward to that. Any further questions on this? If not, we'll move on to the final items. And again, Mr. Kubitschek, Mr. Graham has a meeting to begin in about 22 minutes and a very full agenda. So
I will see if we can actually go through this very quickly.
Thank you.
Okay. Since you already kind of have the general next slide, please. All in all, we view that the weekend in itself was very, very successful. We had a lot of good coordination between our bus operations and our, just the outreach from our police, bus operations, rail operations, emergency management. Next slide. This is really one of the major areas that was really worked out of. This was a portal going north towards Grosvenor. This area was in really bad shape. I brought some samples of our infrastructure that we are removing. Brought some other samples, from the Virginia side, and I just wanted to make sure that the Maryland side is just as important as well on the work that we are undertaking here.
Okay. So that messy thing right there is what you took out.
Yes. And this is from Maryland side, just like we talked in Virginia. The other component was a great concern. While you hear everybody talk about the importance of ball of rail, that looks pretty and nice. This should be concerning as well. And this is what's being replaced. These are the type of things that the capital project and the program that we're working off of right now, that I can say that the red line segment contract that we awarded in December, this is their work already taking place in January. We've been mobilizing very quickly to augment
what we've been doing with our regular maintenance staff. I'd also like to just point this out as well. The base of your rail should look like that.
Okay, there's a question here about the one you just showed us, the previous one with the corrosion at the base of the rail. Yes. How yes. old is that?
This is original equipment, 30 years old. Okay, this is the stuff that we're going after. That's why we spend so much time in Grove. We apologize for the allergies that we're having up there, but this is the stuff that we're working on to ensure the integrity is there so we can operate at normal speed. I would also like to point out something as well.
Or they make it a bit.
Turn to the camera.
I could not be here on the reason.
Be careful what you ask for, Mr. Lynn. The story won't necessarily read the way you
think. While this looks good, some of the things that we're finding, this is what causes catastrophic failures as well. You see that this is a big defect on the ball of rail. This is what creates speed restrictions. With our duty cycles, you keep pounding this with rail car wheels, you'll shatter it, and you'll create rail break right there. So it's not only are we looking at stuff from our infrastructure replacement, but it's also part of our inspection and strategically, you know, working together to get things addressed properly. So I think it speaks for itself on what we're working with. So the other area, this is looking at the next one. The other reason why this is also very important, you notice, is that we're going into an aerial structure. We've got a grade going down, and we're going into the DF track. This is a lot of moving components and stuff. It's a very, very critical area. A lot of tough stuff is taking place. Just some underground activity to show you what's taking place. You know, the corrosion, the wear, the tear, and everything else. Plates and stuff that are loose are getting dislodged and such, and stuff that's, you know, that we're replacing. Next slide. Example right in here where I showed you the footing of the rail. A lot of time the focus is right in here, but we really have to look at this infrastructure from top to bottom, how we secure it. You start getting into areas right in here, you start using additional electricity, and it impacts your overall performance, and it reduces your quality of your train control signaling as well. It all has a domino effect. Next slide. Some crews just to show you how close it is. Since the railroad is built so close, we literally have to cut these things in two with chainsaws or other devices trying to figure out how to get out because there's no room to take it off here, or we have to remove all of this third rail and lay it off to the side. Next slide. This is up on the aerial structure as well. So we're changing out grout pads, putting in brand new rail. Next slide. Just to kind of give you an idea on communications on what's taking place, you know, how we're approaching this, reaching out to everybody. We had signage, banners, like I said, it was out there as well looking at this. All in all, we did receive a lot of complaints, had a lot of people there, our MIPS and stuff, everybody was really important. Next slide. Okay, the bus shuttle service. I'd like to ask Mr. Summon Cannon to stand up. He's one of our bus service directors. He's over there by the pillar, a longtime employee. He's the individual that orchestrated all of the bus communications. A great job. The other thing that makes him really special is that he worked the weekend at his birthday. And what's even more important, what's even more impressive, his wife's birthday was also on the same weekend, and she let him work. So we really appreciate that. Okay. Again, you know, the bus shuttle service, they just did a marvelous job in all the areas. Next slide, please. Okay, if I could, there's three other people I just want to note real quick. From a security standpoint, Mr. Lieutenant Gregory Hanna, please stand up. This is the gentleman who is orchestrating all the emergency management, the police, the logistics, the traffic, and everything. We're bringing these individuals in together, and again, with his efforts and his leadership and stuff, that's why we really were kind of an incident-free time frame from a communication or response standpoint. The staff is doing also, the other thing that's impressive with these individuals is there's a twice-a-day conference call all the way through there to make sure the logistics and such are really being discussed. So I appreciate his support. Mr. Wes Albright, he's Assistant General Superintendent over Track and Structures. This is the gentleman who thinks about this stuff 24/7. He is really the individual that, you know, is looking at this from a maintenance perspective, what we need to do, how to accelerate things to ensure that we get these materials and stuff replaced. And if I could ask Kenny to also stand up. Kenny is his counterpart. This is your capital project right in here, the red line survey. The red line segment project. He's the project manager. So with these two individuals, with Wes working on his staff to do the maintenance, the inspections, and the major repairs, and then Mr. Spain to come in and augment that, and for us to mobilize this quick in a matter of, you know, less than a month, is truly very remarkable for us to mobilize. So that goes for both of those guys. President's Day weekend.
Can I jump in for just a second? Thank you. As many of you may know, I live very, very close to the Grosvenor Station, and when I heard that it was going to be closed over Martin Luther King birthday weekend, I got very nervous about the number of my neighbors that were going to be pounding on my door and be extremely upset. And the town that I live in, everybody knows me, and they would be coming over, as well as people from the general area. I want to compliment staff. They did an absolutely fantastic job. They really did. I was out there looking at some of the work that was being done in the pouring rain, freezing, pouring rain, and they were out there working and trying to get this all done in the time period that they had, and it was extremely impressive. Also, the communications were excellent. Those banners went up way early. People did look at them. They knew they were there. All of the different ways of communicating. Thank you to the press who said this over and over and over again, radio and television. The people knew what was going on. The bus service was excellent. People were very happy with it. It was extremely well done. It was a model of how things like this should be done. Thank you very, very much.
Okay. Just a friendly reminder for President's Day weekend coming up here this coming February. We're going to have a Roslyn shutdown. This one is going to be another massive effort. We are going to be changing out both interlockings on both tracks. We've got a lot of communication outreach that's taking place as far as our bus shuttle service and also our rail service. Also in parallel, what's also very exciting about this is that we're also going to have a regional emergency response drill as well. So the chief or his emergency management team are taking advantage of this as well. There'll be some other parallel drills and stuff that are taking place. We will attack it this area the same energy we've been doing with the others. But this is another critical area of the railroad that must be addressed in this fashion, and we will be changing out everything through both of the interlocking.
Chief Schwartz in the Arlington Fire Department.
Pardon?
Involved in the exercise.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Board a quick update on the loss of shunt tool that we've been working on. As everybody's aware, there was a form of a loss of shunt tool that was utilized maybe in a more of a manual capacity. But what we're looking at post of June 22nd is how do you go about implementing something that is real time, 24/7, that does not require the review of our engineers.
In plain language, this is something that tells you when.
Absolutely.
When there is a train or isn't a train, and if there's a loss of the basically the signal that detects the train, you want to know that right away.
Absolutely. What this is basically here is a snapshot of the data that this system is pulling and working on right now. The six actually represents the length of the rail car, so 6-car train, 8-car train. You notice here at the top, we've got all these milepost markers interlocking. On the left-hand side, you've got timestamp of everything that's taking place. This is basically the way that we're looking at it. The reason why you see these lines, it represents time and also distance. And say, for instance, if we were to see a fault, then you might have a little bitty red dot or something that gives you an alert that there was some type of problem from a visual standpoint. This product right now is running on all the alignments in a test phase, and we are also, it has the intelligence that is beginning to email some of our engineers of its findings. We're still continuing, I'll make this clear, we're still continuing the manual process,
twice today. This is another area that's working in parallel for us to achieve full automation. Next slide, please. And, you know, the major next steps is that we're going to see probably another development in April where we're going to enhance the product a little bit more. Now we're going to start getting really focused out on the business rule side, how we integrate it into the control center, how the controllers are trained to utilize this tool, and the notification process that's taking place. There has to be very succinct and clear business processes for this tool to be effective. And also on this right here, if the schedule keeps holding, fourth quarter of 2010, we expect to have this thing implemented, fully automated, and working and in use in a live environment.
And so this will begin addressing the post-June 22nd issue.
That is part of the process, yes. Okay, redundant systems. There's been a lot of work behind the scenes, you know, since June 22nd. Next slide, please. Just want to kind of give the board a briefing that we haven't been sitting idly just waiting on NTSB or the findings or just working with one specific individual. These are just a few of the vendors that we've spoken with, you know, directly, not only about their U.S. content, but also what they do from a global perspective as well. Because as we all know, some of our signaling systems and stuff and the technology actually abroad is far more sophisticated than what we do have stateside at this time. Next slide, please. Okay, this doesn't show it very well. One of the things that we're looking at is an axle wheel counter. It's truly a redundant system. There's costs associated with it on the way that it works. The top diagram is basically all electronic controls. It goes into the train control room. You have to run another series of wires along the right-of-way. You have a junction box. And then basically you have a physical device that mounts to the ball of rail. And so from representation, what happens is that you can just imagine a device that would be clamped or bolted off to the side. And every time a rail car runs across here, it picks up a pulse from the metal of the wheel. So what it's looking at is X amount of axles in, X amount of axles out. It's a standalone redundant system that you can work with. It's not a system that we are saying that we're promoting. It's just a system that we are going to go out and test, and we're going to, you know, start that. We've been in discussions, and very shortly we'll actually have this on one of the alignments.
Okay. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that.
Yes.
In one sentence, this matters to us because?
It is a redundant train control system.
What I was thinking was, Mr. Kubitschek, is this about getting us back to automatic train operation?
This is part of it, yes.
So we have to have something like this to work in order to restore automatic train operation.
The loss of shut tool in combination with the changes we're making will probably, as we work with the NTSB, my hope is that will be sufficient for us to move because we'll have two systems. What we're looking at here is the next generation of what we're going to do with this railroad as we move forward, because there are, as we all know, technology is going to have to be changed here. So we might as well start looking at it now instead of waiting on it and spending millions of dollars on consultant fees, telling us about theories. This is about putting stuff on the railroad, testing it now.
Very good. So you have a question? Mr. Grant?
I have a related issue.
To this, or do you want
to? Well, I don't know.
Was that another question, Mr. Kubitschek?
I don't know what it relates to, but it's related to the work of this committee.
Well, then, go right ahead.
Okay. We had what I thought was a very important memo, and I know we don't have time to go into it, because I'm conscious of the time of our board meeting, but it was relating to elevator escalators. And I just want to be sure that this is noted so it's just not passed by, because we had requested important information relating to elevator escalators and liability, namely whether an out-of-house service is as responsive as our in-house capacity. And I just want to make sure, I want to call attention to it, because, you know, this is, as everyone here knows, this is an ongoing issue of great concern for our customers, the operation of elevators and escalators. And the finding, could you just state the finding? I can stay with it.
I didn't bring the document with me.
Mr. Graham, why don't you state your view of the finding and last step?
My view of the finding is that, if I read it correctly, is that our in-house capacity is more responsive than what our experience has been with private contractors.
That
That is correct. Yes, sir.
And I remember the number 36%.
36%.
More responsive. So that, in all of the discussions that we've had over the years on elevators, escalators, this is an important piece of information. I didn't want to lose it.
I think that is a very important item and something that as we go forward with discussion on this issue specifically and in the context of the budget, it's something that we need to come back to and see what the recommendations will be for how we go forward in light of that information. Is there anything further? All right. Well, I believe...
That'll be next door.
Which we will be able to hopefully start on time since we're adjourning 5 minutes before. And with that, this committee meeting is adjourned.